Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This is Computer Talk with Tab, hosted by Eric Semmel of Tab Computer Systems. Interact with Eric and his guest by phone at 522-WTIC or 1-800-966-WTIC. Email them in the studio at gethelp@tabinc.com or get help anytime at computertalkwithtab.com. Now, here's Eric.
And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Bob.
And Bob is Bob Shorey. He's one of the MCSCs at Tab. He comes in and helps me out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. We're running a little late here, but we're going to all catch up. This is our normal program. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC, and we'll do our best to help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. Now, a year ago today, Chris Murphy was emailing my kids at UConn telling them that if net neutrality is removed by the FCC, your free and open internet's going to go away. Be afraid. Thanks, Chris. Kids come home and tell me, Daddy, the free internet. Well, they didn't say Daddy. They're like, hey, Dad, the free internet's going to go away. Chris Murphy told us so. Well, of course, it didn't. It's a year ago today, and when the FCC said, hey, no net neutrality. Net neutrality is not necessary.
Well, you got to understand, to a politician, everything is free.
Exactly.
That's all true. They need to do is pass a law, and yeah, it's theirs.
It's theirs. So it's been 12 months, and you still have been able to download all the illegal movies you ever wanted to download, legal or illegal these days. You can go ahead on Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. The headlines at CNN, which is even surprising that people even go into that site, according to this article, which is kind of funny, said the internet is no longer going to, is dead as we know it. And that was the front page. And of course, somehow, some way, CNN.com still exists. So again, what is net neutrality? Well, Chris Murphy wanted to make sure that the broadband companies couldn't charge you more for moving more data at a faster rate down the internet. He wanted to keep the internet open so that there was no extra charges. So if Bob downloaded 4K movies all day long, he wasn't going to get charged anymore by the cable company. If I just was reading email, I'd be charged the same. What does that mean? The network has to charge all of us more because they have to cover Bob's 4K movie habit. So all of us would have incurred higher costs if they couldn't hit Bob for more fees. But they have not hit you, have they, Bob? They don't hit you more for your 4K movie habit. I'm just speaking hypothetically. He doesn't have a 4K movie habit. But my point is, they're not doing it, right?
Well, I pay an ungodly charge as it is now.
Well, that's exactly right. But the point is, they have the ability to manage their network, and they're not charging you more to do it. And net neutrality was supposed to protect you from them doing that to you. Now, here in Connecticut, on our actual highways, those things that we drive our cars on that are packets on the internet, Governor Lamont is going to actually consider tolling Mack trucks, which would be equivalent to Bob's 4K movie habit.
Yeah, but that can't happen. Article 1, Section 10 of the Constitution expressly forbids that because they did that prior to the states becoming a country.
Right. I'm just talking about the technology, but you're right about the Constitution. But the point is, he wants to tax the Mack trucks with tolls on our actual highways. So he believes in not having net neutrality either. He believes he can tax those trucks separate from us cars. Now, we all know he's going to tax everything, right? But
the point
is, the government seems to be okay with not having net neutrality and taxing our packets on the highway. That's what they want to do to us next.
Well, yeah, plus
but
they also
they don't
have
want the
to
internet
protect,
companies doing it.
They have to protect these these carve-outs, you know what I mean? The territories that currently exist.
I know, but it is interesting. Interesting juxtaposition, I think.
Yeah, we could all still be stuck with the frontier.
Exactly. So we'll put a link up here to some of the articles talking about the fact that it's been a year since net neutrality was killed, and Chris Murphy predicting it's our demise of the internet, and it's still here, guys. And you haven't been charged more. We're being charged too much, but there are competitors out there that if we just welcome them into our neighborhoods, like Go NetSpeed, if you just tell, if 10% of your town says to Go NetSpeed, come on in, you'll have a competitor against the other incumbent broadbands. Just tell them you're interested.
I've sent them two emails so far.
Keep it coming.
I've signed up. Anyway, I've got an article I can post relative to this also because it's 10 pages long. It's a long read. Mm-hmm. And there are links to other articles so that if you really want to know all the different nuances of the net neutrality debate, you could read this article. This would take you a good half a day probably to read it all. But... you know, like say, if you're really interested in the subject, you know, we can post a link.
All right, very good. In other news,
the fight's not over, by the way.
Oh no, 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 no. They want to figure out some way to quote unquote keep the internet free and open, but all that means is
we got to protect our cronies.
Yeah, it's the status quo of the incumbent broadband providers. What else you got there, Bob? You want to bring up?
Okay, so I got the two on the net neutrality.
Yeah,
and we have a foul-mouthed rescue parrot.
Yeah.
He forges an Amazon Alexa friendship.
Oh, you're kidding.
Rocco, the African gray parrot, isn't the usual sort of G-rated animal rescue story. The stray bird came into the care of the National Animal Welfare Trust charity in the UK in late 2017 and soon showed off his love of swear words.
Oh, boy.
Rocco has since developed a charming new habit, talking to Amazon Alexa Echo Assistant.
Nice.
The National Animal Welfare Trust says Rocco caused a few issues initially in the office by swearing regularly and throwing his water bowl around.
Yeah.
Staff member Marion Wisniewski adopted the cute troublemaker anyway.
Yeah.
And the National Animal Welfare Trust reported on Friday that Rocco has fallen in love with Wisniewski's Alexa device.
Of course.
Wisniewski told the Sun that she has to check her Amazon shopping list and cancel the items the bird has ordered.
What is a bird ordering on Alexa?
He's attempted to shop for treats, including strawberries, watermelon raisins, and ice cream.
No way.
And get some delivered.
I love it.
Yeah, despite his dirty vocabulary and passion for Amazon shopping, Wisniewski says, he loves to dance and has the sweetest personality.
Okay. But he's ordering stuff on Amazon through Alexa, through their smart speaker, otherwise known as a smart microphone.
Well, you know, they can copy your voice, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly. So that so Rocco funny. Sounds just like, you know.
Just like his owner.
Yep.
All right. Well, in other news on smart microphones really quickly, forget your deepest, darkest secrets that you're going to, of course, should be considering while your smart microphone, otherwise known as a smart speaker, listening to you. It's now going to start listening to your sniffles and farts. Basically, it's going to listen to see what's going on with you personally. According to a British AI company, they're hoping to actually use artificial intelligence to sell you stuff. So like Bob, you can probably tell, has a little bit of a cold. So his smart microphone in his home would be able to say, hey, buddy, you know what? Can I order you some Halls there? You got a little tickly? You know, maybe I can get you some Puffs Plus for that little scratchy nose there because you're sneezing all the time. So just imagine having this happen. I mean, we are somehow finding ourselves comfortable with sticking a microphone in our homes connected to huge multi-conglomerate style commercial companies so that they can sell you stuff. Wouldn't that be weird if all of a sudden the speaker talks back to say, hey, Bob, I think you got a cold. Would you like me to order you some? Is your nose itchy? Do you need some Sudafed, kid?
You know,
yeah.
We talk about the smart speakers. I recently won one, and I have one that I use, which I want to get rid of.
Right.
And you know what I'm finding out?
What?
Nobody wants them anymore.
No. Why would you want a microphone in your house?
Well, the answers that I'm getting is that they're creepy.
Yeah, connected to lovely companies like Google and Amazon. They're just so warm and fuzzy. They're just out to be at your best interest.
And they're not sharing anything with the government.
No. It's not the government. They're going to share it with all their folks trying to sell you stuff. So I'll put a link on here to that. But that's what they're thinking to do next. They're going to actually listening for all sorts of stuff for you guys to make sure that they can keep you nice and comfortable with your cold. So we're going to step out for a quick break. We're going to put all these online for you to read. This is Computer Talk with Tab. Anything we talk about is posted live over at computertalkwithtab.com. We'll be right back. And we are back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We are live. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. And we'll do our best to help you out with your computer comments, questions, and concerns. We did have a little snafu, so the show started a little late this morning. But feel free to get online. We're here live, four lines wide open, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. And we'll do our best to help you out. And while we wait for your calls, in other news, this is kind of an interesting thing. A small town rejects Comcast. Basically, they decided, rather than having Comcast come in, this is in Charmount, Massachusetts, which boasts just 1,300 residents. They basically said, you know what, we're not really interested in having Comcast come in and build out a internet network. They're going to build our own. So this is, again, municipal broadband, and they had a vote, and the measure passed with 56% rejecting Comcast offer for the next 20 years. Basically, they will pay an average of $133 each for the year to cover the cost of the build out. That's nothing. $133 a year to get your own high speed broadband versus being beholden to Comcast. Good for these guys. So there'll be the ability for them to have high-speed broadband internet on their own municipal broadband versus the...
For $133 a year, not a month.
Well, that's the tax. So you're being taxed for that build-out piece, right? That's your... Every household has to pay that little chunk every year to maintain the network, right? But they do have to pay for the service. And the service is about... is less expensive than Comcast's service. And, of course, it's their network. So they're not going to have to worry about introductory offers that then triple and quadruple over time, right? All the things that we're all dealing with because they're the ones maintaining the network themselves.
So what does Whip City charge?
Oh, gosh. Whip City up there in Westfield. Is it Westfield?
Yeah.
I think they are. But they're the buggy whip capital of the world, and they are charging, what, $60 or something like that for 100 megabit connections a month? I can go look at it. But even GoNetSpeed is another example. Which is just another option for a high speed connection to your home, much cheaper than these incumbent broadband companies. So they're happy to spend $1 million of their own money to escape being part of folks like Comcast. I'll put a link up here for you guys. Take a look at it, but it is interesting. Let's get to your calls here, and I think we got a call coming in from Florida. Matt, is he all set? Matt, you there, Matt? Oh, he's on the phone talking to him, I think. Maybe not. But we still have three lines open, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. You know, what would you rather do? Would you rather have your own municipal broadband, or would you rather be paying for what you're paying now, which is generally a car payment for internet and TV?
Well, we lost our caller.
Yeah.
But if you think about it, mm-hmm. what the cities are charging, you know, compared to what the protected monopolies are charging.
I know.
You know, it's like amazing, you know, how much the profit is.
Right. So pure internet access would be $50 to $105 through Comcast, but between $80 to $100 through municipal. But that, again, comes down to what they're going to offer you for some sort of introductory offer. You're not going to have to deal with monthly modem rentals. You're not going to have to deal with any kind of data caps. But basically, they're saying it's going to be slightly cheaper than Comcast to build their own network, but they're happy to do it. They're happy to actually bond $1 million to build their own network than deal with Comcast. So we just need more options here in Connecticut. And more like this. There's a Sci-Fi coming into East Hartford, which is kind of a public-private connection. That's going to happen, which I'm looking forward to. There have been other municipal broadbands. Again, the folks are trying to quash it, unfortunately. But there have been some successes here in Connecticut for that and failures. I mean, New London didn't have a good rollout of their municipal broadband. But all we need is opportunity and options to keep our prices down. So we're going to step out for a quick break. We've got Bill and Windsor on the line. We've got three lines open for you on this Saturday morning. I know you're all out there shopping. But if you have any issues or questions or comments or concerns having to do with computers, Bob and I are here live. We'll take them and do our best for you. Everything we talked about so far is posted live over at ComputerTalkWithTab.com. It's the name of the show.com, which also works. If you go to Facebook and you happen to like Tab Computer Systems on Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg deems the news worthy, it might get into your news feed. And if you follow us on Twitter at Tab Computer Sys, we'll tweet it right to you. We'll be right back. Back. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We are going to be here till 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online. And we have one line open for you, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. I just want to clarify on Whip City Fiber. Again, this is municipal fiber just across the border. Literally just across the border in the buggy whip capital of the world. They are selling their residents' internet for $69 a month for 1,000 megabits of speed up and down.
That's gigabit speed.
For 69.
Gigabit speed.
For $69. No contracts. No caps. That's municipal fiber. That's how it can be done right. And New London didn't do it so well. They actually went bankrupt.
So that's the definition of net neutrality right there.
Sort of.
Up and down. Gigabit speed.
Oh, it's equal. Yeah, well, there's a definition. Yeah, not the way that the marketers want to spin it to you. All right, let's get to your calls. You're nice enough to join us on this Saturday morning. Let's go to Bill in Windsor. What's going on, Bill?
Good morning. How are you today?
Doing fine. How are you, sir?
Terrific. Yeah, I've been listening to your conversations last week and this week as well on the invasion privacy issues associated with devices such as Alexa.
Yeah.
I've been doing some research into some of these home-based internet monitoring systems, such as Arlo, Nest, Ring, perhaps others, and which will allow me to monitor my home from afar.
Yeah.
And my question is, do these devices introduce the same invasion of privacy issues as Alexa? And if they do, are there ways to prevent this from happening?
So, yes. Any kind of camera in your home, technically, you got to be careful with as far as how you configure it. Most people don't configure it securely, right? So, they don't set up any proper passwords and proper configurations. So, they use defaults. And before you know it, anybody's looking at your camera. There's cameras all over the world that you can just – they have a whole list of them of people who have misconfigured their security cameras so people can look at your home or look whatever wherever you put your camera. So, the answer is yes, same exact privacy concerns if you haven't configured them properly. If they happen to include a microphone, even further concerns, right? Mm-hmm. So the answer is yes. And also, it gets creepy. Putting cameras within your home, too, you know, there's an issue of even your guests being aware that you've got cameras in there that you may want to say, hey, guys, by the way, I've got like 15 cameras in here and they're watching everything we do. There's some, you know, issues there, I think, when it comes to having people in your home and you've got cameras pointing within the home. Pointing externally, same idea. Great for security. To see what's going on in your home, but there are issues if you haven't configured it properly, and a lot of people don't. They just plug it in. Even professionals, sadly, don't. They'll use defaults and everything and not even bother setting it up properly through firewalls and properly configuring
it. I was thinking, you know, having all those cameras in your home, doing the security and all that,
right?
That might be good protection against... like a college frat party.
Well, yeah. It's good for that.
Everything being recorded.
It's good for that. But yeah, you should have those same concerns, Bill. So you have to read the instructions of your video camera systems and make sure you secure them. They do have the instructions. People don't read them. They just plug
if properly set up, they are secure.
Well, that's always going to have a
as
quote.
As much as anything can be.
Correct. There's always going to be quotes around it because you're still hoping that the provider of the cameras don't have backdoors and improperly configured systems themselves. So there's a lot of cameras out there that were manufactured badly, and the manufacturers didn't even realize that even though you thought you configured it properly, there's still backdoors and ways to get at these cameras that the manufacturer wasn't aware of. So, yes, you don't even know. If you do it all right, you could still be wide open and not even realize it.
A lot of these cameras were designed as closed-circuit television cameras, and the firmware doesn't have the privacy built into them.
No.
So when you buy them, you have to go to the manufacturer and download and install the latest firmware, which most people don't have the technological know-how to do.
Yeah.
So that, you know, you can get this security firmware implemented.
And the reason they had those that firmware is because they realized they didn't have an update in the first place, and they had to do it. So keep it in mind. It's definitely an issue, and it will continue to be an issue. The more we connect internet-connected devices to ourselves and our homes, the more security risks we're going to have.
See, my problem with most of these security platforms is that they rely on a cloud-based control, where it's controlled by a third party.
Right.
And I'll buy in when I can move that control platform into my house and I have control
on your own computer.
And then the third party doesn't have access to it.
Exactly. But they want to rent you or bill you something monthly, so they give
you
this ridiculous connection to the cloud.
And then if the cloud goes down, you can't open the door.
You can't open your front door. Yeah, so you're right to be concerned, Bill.
Okay, I even keep a little post-it on the camera that's on my computer, so that's where I'm at in terms of worrying about
covering it up. Covering up. Yep, that's an issue, too.
So. Thank you for your time this morning. Appreciate it. Have a nice holiday.
Yep. Thank you, too, sir.
Thank you.
All right. So, be concerned. Be very concerned. Let's go on to Jason in East Heartland next. Hey, Jason, what's up?
Hey, how are you guys?
Doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you.
Good.
Just a question on backing up a laptop PC.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like I'm using a Windows 10 utility, the tool, to back it up to an external drive.
All right.
And the whole process takes like 20 seconds to a minute, so it doesn't seem like it's really backing it up. And I go look in the drive, and I don't see like a folder modified within the past year. So
oh boy,
it doesn't
yeah.
look like it's doing anything.
I agree. Yeah, I think you've got a misconfigured backup of some kind. There's two ways to look at this, Jason. When you're doing an actual automated backup, you're actually going to produce a file that's going to be unreadable except by that software to restore. So if you look at backups the more simple way, if you just do a copy and paste, like if you have directories that you know are your important file directories, you know, my documents, pictures, music, whatever you might have stored them, you can simply do copy and paste on occasion and actually just copy the data over to the drive and then disconnect it. Now the data is just sitting there. It's not in some funky format that you have to worry about because you simply did a copy and paste. That's a idea, not necessarily a good idea. It's a idea because there's drawbacks of that because you could miss directories that you should be grabbing, and it could be your next novel you worked on. You set up a directory, or your wife, God forbid, created a novel saying this is my next great work, and you're not backing it up, and then you're in trouble because you did it selectively. So a selective backup is not as good as an all-encompassing backup. But Windows backup clearly is not working for you, I don't think. You could try a third-party backup. I recommend Ezus. Yeah, Ezus. Yeah, it's a Chinese company. A little nervous on that, but it does work. and again, it's going to produce that same backup technology. It's going to slam to your hard drive, that hard drive off that's connected to your machine, but it won't be in a readable fashion until you do a restoration. You need the software to restore it,
mm-hmm.
but you can grab your whole system and it can be automated. So I can put a link to that tool because I think your Windows backup is not that good. And we could try to walk you through properly setting up a Windows backup, but...
Well, if there's a better utility from third party.
I think so.
Versus the Windows one.
Yeah, we wouldn't use a Windows anything if we can avoid it. Any utility that has the word Windows in it, we try to avoid and use third parties.
Well, there are utilities in Windows that you can use that will do an excellent job. However, it's not easy.
Yes, they always overcomplicate things.
Right. You can do simple things like, you know, xcopy and all sorts of little basic copy commands to do this backup. That one I first told you about where you set up a batch or a scheduled time in your system to kick off this batch file that says copy all my files from these directories to that spot. But again, it's selective, right? So if you put something important and you haven't included it in your selection, you're not going to back it up.
Gotcha.
So we'll put the link to the Ezus. It's by Tudu, I think. And check it out and see if that works for you. Otherwise, do a simple copy. But make sure you disconnect that hard drive from your computer.
Oh, I do. I have it on my desk, and once in a while, when I remember, I'll plug it in and run a backup. So it's all.
Oh, so you're still doing it manually now?
Yeah, I don't have it automatic scheduled. I just do it at times.
So maybe the backup copy is the way to do it. Again, time flies faster than you think, so you could miss all sorts of data by doing it manually too.
That is true. That is true. But I hate to leave the drive plugged in. Well, it's
don't do that.
So I'm always, it's always on the road with me every day anyway. So it gets plugged in and unplugged every day.
All right, good. Yeah. And the reason we don't want it plugged in is because if you get hit with crypto, if your drive is encrypted, it's probably going to encrypt your backup too.
Exactly. That's why I never leave it plugged in.
Good. All right, so those are a couple options for you. We'll put a link up there for you for the software. You can check it out.
And you said it's a Chinese company?
I think it is, yeah.
And they don't steal.
No, see, I get creeped out about it too. But in my case, they're just backing up my pictures. I don't care if they got my pictures.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you're working at Pratt & Whitney, I wouldn't recommend you use it.
Gotcha. All right, well, we'll give them a try.
Yeah, all right, thanks. Good luck, Jason.
Thank you.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
You know, it's like Kaspersky and the antivirus. You know, why would you use Russian antivirus or antivirus software from any place other than America? Just doesn't seem smart. If you're a business or, you know, again, if you want to run it on your home computer and you don't care if the Russians know about you, go ahead. It's up to you. All right, we're going to step out for a quick break. We've got Gary and Mark on the line. Two lines open for you guys, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC. We'll be right back. Back. That was a quick break. Matt's cracking the whip this morning. We're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Feel free to get online, 800-966-WTIC, 522-WTIC.
No rest for the wicked.
No. My goodness. Let's go to Marking. Well, he went through all his commercial spots and the little snafu we had. Let's go to Mark and Cromwell. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing fine. How are you?
Love your show, by the way. It's the most informative thing you offer on that station.
Well, I appreciate that you like our show. Yeah.
Thanks. I want to ask you a question. What are your thoughts are about a VPN like IP Vanish? Is that something worth having or not?
Well, so VPNs is, again, you're trying to be more private, right, on the internet?
Yeah, I just feel like Big Brother's watching all the time.
Yep. Yeah, so there are whole articles that have been written by all sorts of folks that talk about the different VPNs out there to be more secure, quote unquote. However, some of them actually use your local DNS. So you think you're actually surfing securely and you're not, because your local DNS is being asked for the site that you're going to, and that DNS then is listed within your internet provider, right? Uh-huh. So you thought you were being secure and you're not.
Uh-huh.
I would say that I don't know which ones are the ones that I trust to be more secure.
Uh-huh.
And understand that they themselves have access to your DNS queries, right? So if they did it right and they use their DNS for your queries, who's to say someone can't go and find out where you went through their system, right?
Right.
Maybe if they're the Swiss. Who knows? So I guess I would have to defer to smarter people than I that have actually used these technologies to try to be more secure. And I can find some recommendations for you out there from some trusted authors that we would recommend that you read to see if they have an opinion on that. But
that would be great.
Yeah, I'll do that. But I would contend you're not going to necessarily be much more secure. However, you know, DuckDuckGo is a search engine out there that claims to be more private. And they recently had a fight with Google just to get duck.com back as a domain name. Google didn't want to give it back to them. So I can put information about that up there, and I'll try to find some good articles on the VPNs. I've definitely read a few things on it, but I couldn't tell you which one's the most secure, quote unquote.
Okay.
All right, because they are until they're not, right?
Yeah. That's what I just wondered, if they're just going to gather my data anyway and send it somewhere else.
Yeah. Anything you do on the internet is traceable, right?
Right.
So the company can say, hey, Mark, we're not going to share your data with anybody until they do.
Right.
Until somebody calls up and says, hey, I need this data about Mark. And they're like, okay.
Yeah, right. Okay. So they're beaten no matter what you do, I guess.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah, I would just contend. I would just tell you, when you're on the internet, somebody knows you're on the internet.
Right.
So, you know, if what you're looking for is not something that, I mean, in some cases, I guess I could argue a little bit. I don't work for the ACLU, but that, you know, if you're looking for bomb making material, I think some little alarm should go off maybe somewhere. I mean, I have mixed feelings about that. You know, maybe you're looking to understand the technology, but I don't know. You know, should an alarm go off somewhere? I mean, obviously, pure libertarians would say, hell no. Mark can look up whatever he wants.
Maybe you want to look up what you don't want to buy.
Yeah, you just can't. Yeah, you know, I mean.
Right.
But I'll put some links up there for you, Mark.
Okay, that'd be great.
All right, sir. All right.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you for the call.
All right, have a good holiday.
You too.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Or, my neighbor's buying all this stuff. I wonder what it's for.
Yeah, right. Why is this ammonium nitrate being delivered to his house? I don't understand.
He doesn't have a big farm.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a double-edged sword, right? We all want our own privacy, yet we put microphones in our houses. And then Mark wants to, you know, feel that he can be, you know, open and surf the internet for whatever the heck he wants to and not worry about Big Brother making a judgment of what he's doing. Yeah, it's a double-edged sword. You know, you heard the whole thing about that email that happened on Thursday, right, where the bomb, quote-unquote, bomb threats were sent out worldwide and this crazy email thing, right? You know, where they said, hey, if you don't give me $20,000 in Bitcoin, I'm going to blow your building up. I mean, most people would realize that's a scam in about 30 seconds. But again, you just can't be too careful these days.
Well, wait a minute. They sent them to government entities.
Oh, and businesses and churches and right. You name it. All sorts of things.
But people who are running the government depend on IT people. And most governments don't have their own IT people. So they can't call anybody. So the first thing they do is panic. Yeah. And they don't know how to look through the headers.
Right.
And somebody went and looked through the headers and said, well, this originated from Moscow.
Yeah.
And now, I don't know about you,
yeah,
but I get this thing asking for Bitcoin because it claims I did something I didn't do. And it's watching me on my webcam that I don't have.
Right.
And, you know, it's recreated recordings of me and all of this other stuff.
It's awful.
And if I only sent them $14,000, they'll make it all go away
in Bitcoin.
Yeah. And you know what? It comes from Russia.
Yeah.
It
comes from all sorts
of places.
As
soon as that was on the news, I says, you know, this is one of those...
it's a hoax.
It's a scam.
And the thing is, this could be all stopped. Bitcoin is fake money. It's fake money. They want they don't call it $20,000 in Bitcoin. They don't call it 20,000 Bitcoins. They say, I want $20,000, the real money, worth of fake money. So, if Blumenthal wants to do something, I mean, I know he's working on the EpiPens, working hard. I mean, that hasn't changed much. But if you really want to work on something, make it illegal to connect anything real to something fake like Bitcoin.
Well, how come nobody will take Bitcoin?
But the bad guys.
On their websites.
Well, it's just the bad guys that want to take it.
You can't cash in. Of course, what you call Amazon's going to come out with their own version of Bitcoin.
And in my opinion, I think they accept Bitcoin. These companies that are accepting this fake money, it's fake, are causing this problem. The bad guys can use it to just say, send us money to an anonymous place, and they really can't be caught as easily because these Bitcoin wallets are truly anonymous. We just have to say exchanges of Bitcoin to make it into real can't exist. So the bad guys can use their fake money to buy fake whatever, but they want to go ahead and convert it into real money so they can buy a real boat. All right, 20 grand and is a boat, right? In Russia, it's two boats.
My contention
in the case
is,
of toilet paper.
And this is just theory on my part. My contention is Bitcoin was created to create an anonymous method of transferring money around the world for nefarious means.
Exactly.
You know.
So if you really want a cause, that's one you should go after. Make it impossible to convert something fake like that into something real. If it wants to stay in the fake world, that's great. They can go play with their Bitcoin all day long. But the moment it connects to the real, it's causing a problem.
It's like taking a $20 coupon from Walmart and going down to some other store and say, hey, I want $20 worth of merchandise for this.
Yeah, right. No thanks.
This is 1/10 of a cent value.
Let's go quickly on to Gary here. He's been waiting the longest. Hey, Gary, what's up?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing fine.
I had a quick question. I have a Windows 7 laptop, and I'm milking it. I'm milking it for as long as it will go.
Okay.
I have some issues. It's over 7 years old. You know, I know I need to get a new computer, Windows 10. I don't have internet or where I am. I use a Verizon hotspot where I get one bar that blows away to nothing.
Oh, boy.
So anyhow, I've had issues where the updates have probably been cut off, and then there's issues about the computer running properly.
Yeah.
So I really don't know what the answer is to get a new computer.
No, your internet is so slow, you can't even do the update probably.
Yeah, you know, I go like to a library or whatever, but at times. And what I did is, I'm just wondering, if I Windows 97, that came out in 1997, correct?
If you're, say that again?
I have a Windows 97, so that came out in 1997.
Windows. Never heard of Windows 97. There's Windows 98, which came out late. There's Windows 95. There is no Windows 97. If you get Windows 97, you get something kind of weird.
No, you know what? I'm totally spaced out. I have the home office, I think.
Oh, Office?
Office. They had a 97 version.
An Office 97? Okay, that's the Office suite. And again, Microsoft would like you to believe that it came out that year. Sometimes they did not.
What, besides security, when you get updates twice a week, what is it updating on the platform?
On the Office? For Word and Excel? For, you're talking about for your Word, your Office suite?
Are you, I'm talking about my actual platform.
Your platform? Yeah, they're going to it's basically security is really all you got left with Windows 7. That support's going to end in 2020.
So what happens? Like, I did 2 weeks ago, I turned it off.
Yeah.
And it's almost all security. Well, a friend of mine who's kind of a computer geek, she uses Avast for cleaning and for browsing. And that cleaned out. She said, look, it's not going to clean out Windows on a Windows platform. And it just cleaned out so much stuff. Mm-hmm. I had a problem on desktop where it was really, really slow, and you hit an icon.
Yeah.
Well, I did a desktop scan, and sure. It went 2 hours, and it picked up one, I think it was a Windows broken thing, and that came up. And so it's really flying. But if I have OpenDNS, mm-hmm. I use Malwarebytes,
yep.
And I'm using Avast to clean and also...
You mean Avast, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, you've got some good security tools in place there. You don't need both of them running at the same time. You don't need Malwarebytes and Avast running at the same time. But yeah, so the security updates are going to stop in 2020, and eventually Microsoft will then, maybe a year into it, send an update down that doesn't make your Word work anymore, and you're going to have to upgrade. But as far as
you turn that all off, right?
Yeah. You can.
Can you operate cleanly with all the security there?
You can, yeah. But there could be a vulnerability that you're going to find yourself open to that without the patch, you're going to get hit by it with all your security still there. But your internet's so slow, you're probably okay.
I do use that tonight, but I usually go where there's a Wi-Fi, yeah. Like the library or my work office. So.
Yeah, but to your point, Gary, generally, I agree with your theory. But you could always find a flaw in that armor there, okay?
You know what I'm going to do is I'm going to call you back when I actually crash it, because it has crashed and burned, and then I'll move and get an internet service, and then I'll go from there with it.
All right. We'll be there to help you, Gary. Thanks for calling. All right. We're going to step out for a quick break. This is Computer Talk with Tab. We're going to be here till 11 o'clock. Kurt, hang on. We'll get right to you. Three lines open for you. We'll be right back.